This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Hotel Mars, Episode N, with David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show, joining me as my colleague and co-pilot. And we're very excited to speak to Professor Matthew Weinzierl of the Harvard Business School, who teaches a course on the economics of space, meaning we can go to the private market, to the public issued companies, and those looking to publicly issue stock in future. We begin with SpaceX, of course, because it dominates the news, preparing Super Heavy and Starship for an orbit around the Earth on its way to the Moon and Mars eventually. Matthew, a very good day to you. Thanks for joining us. SpaceX is the shining city on the hill. There are other moments, however, in commercial space, publicly traded companies, where there has been a resounding failure. I name two particularly. One is Virgin Galactics, which right now sees a stock price vastly off of its highs. And the other is Astraspace, which also sees a stock price vastly off its highs, probably on the way to discontinuation. I don't take these failures as anything but a measure of commercialism at work. The commercial nature of business everywhere. Is space different? Do you think that this is a tree that grows to heaven, or does it obey the laws of the market? Good evening to you, Professor.
Good evening, John and David. It's a pleasure to be with both of you. Thanks for having me, and thanks for such a great starting question. John, I would say that the way that you presented it is a very important thing for all of us to start to understand, which is that space is increasingly becoming just another, but maybe another important high-tech, rapidly growing, volatile sector. And we're not used to thinking of space that way. We're used to thinking of space as dominated by a few legacy players that could never possibly actually sail. And yet, when you look at the examples that you just gave, both Virgin and Astra, there's quite particular reasons why both of them have suffered really substantial declines of late. That's going to happen in a competitive marketplace where failure is an option. And then there are other companies that do well at the same time. So I'm very optimistic about the sector, but that doesn't mean that we should be optimistic about every single player in the sector.
David, do you have a question for the professor?
Do you think that we can now, probably with a degree of safety, apply the same kind of standards to a commercial space company that's publicly traded, even if it's a SPAC or an EFT, to a terrestrial company? Because it looks like if these were terrestrial companies, Virgin and Astra, they'd be in the dumps also, because the same standards would take them down. So are we ready now to apply those standards to commercial space companies?
Well, that's an excellent question. I suppose let me give two quick answers to that. The first is that I think it's undeniable over the last couple of years, for sure, there has been a remarkable both surge of money into the sector and then pulling back as the SPAC bubble seems to have burst and people seem to have think that it got a bit out of hand. There has been, I think, a recalibration of how easy the money is going to be into the sector. I think that's actually probably healthy. I think most of us think that it got a little overheated. Are they like terrestrial companies now? I guess I would say yes, but of a certain type of terrestrial company. These are not fully mature consumer goods companies like Procter & Gamble, where we think there's not all that much uncertainty in their quarterly earnings, but more like fast-growing companies, some of whom might be hoping for very rapid ramp-ups in their revenue growth, et cetera, over time. So there's going to be more volatility, more uncertainty. But yes, in general, more realism about how these companies are going to perform.
There are some big companies, Boeing, for example, involved in commercial space construction. They're building a capsule to reach ISS and come back. Other companies we could name, legacy military or aeronautics companies who have aspects of them. Can we anticipate, Professor, that all of those companies with aspects of orbital space or deep space or building satellites will be spin-offs and that will enliven the market when you no longer have to buy Boeing to buy Starliner? You can just buy Starliner?
Well, that's a fascinating question, John, in the sense that I think there is a real challenge for some of the large legacy players keeping up with the speed and innovation that the newer players are bringing to the market. And, you know, if you look at some of the players that are seeing a bit more success than a couple of the ones we've talked about, whether it's Rocket Labs or Relativity, which is still a bit unproven but doing some really exciting work, or Planet, they're just able to move extremely quickly. And we see that even the relatively big players like SpaceX continue to move incredibly quickly, which is just hard for the bigger folks to match. So whether a spinoff is the way for them to do that, or whether just the competition will be enough to inspire innovative thinking within, is a little bit hard for me to see the forecast of. But I can totally imagine the future that you forecast.
So it's not that it's not going to happen. It's too early to see. Is that correct, Professor?
It's too early for me to see, for sure.
David?
Can you look forward and give us an idea of how rising interest rates and taxes and a slowdown economy are going to affect this sector, and especially the new space type of companies in the near to short term?
Sure. Absolutely. It's obviously a quite uncertain macroeconomic time. I would say that I'm not all that concerned about the business cycle in the relatively short term for the space sector. And let me explain why I think that is. On inflation, you know, in some senses, this is a price-sensitive market, but I would say it's not price-sensitive in the small, in some sense. So the difference between 3%, 5% inflation, that's not what's going to matter for the space sector. Contracts are dynamic. They're negotiable. It's still a relatively small number of players who can figure this stuff out. On taxes, there's a long discussion we could have about taxes on corporations in general and what they do. I don't have any particular reason to worry more or less for the space companies about corporate tax policy. Interest rates are still pretty low. I mean, you know, Fed funds at 2.3 is not a sky high interest rate. So I think that this is all manageable, and it's manageable because, you know, what we're really talking about happening in the space sector, why we're all so excited, is because costs are coming down by things like things of an order of magnitude, right? So SpaceX can bring down launch costs by an order of magnitude. Hopefully commercial stations can bring down the cost of activity on stations by an order of magnitude over the next several years. And those are going to swamp some of these more transitory macroeconomic frictions.
Orbital space is the old frontier. The new frontier is the South Pole of the Moon, or someplace on Mars with access to the ice. We can imagine cities. Musk talks about them all the time, cities underground. All that development, do your students see that as well, Professor? Is that why they're involved in the economics of space? Because that's a lot of asset base out there on those two particular planetary bodies.
Sure. So some of my students, as I would guess some of your listeners, come to space for precisely, or do precisely to that inspiration, right? They can imagine future societies, whether they're on the surface of Mars or whether they're floating, spinning colonies that are fueled by some of the resources you can find on the moon and Mars. I would say, though, that the business school students tend to be a bit more pragmatic, perhaps, and so they want to also make sure that there's a market in the near term and medium term. And I think that they are cognizant of the fact that a lot of the steps we would need to take to make those future colonies successful will also lower the costs of doing activity nearer to Earth. And while we're building that exciting future, we can make money with data and near-Earth manufacturing and tourism and other things like that.
David, another question.
I'm wondering what the job situation is for the business side of space and the management. So you look at their company's websites and they're posting for engineers, material scientists, et cetera. Are you seeing the job side for students, not from the engineering side, opening up? Is that becoming more prevalent or about the same?
Right. That's an important question, certainly for my students. I will say that when I first started really thinking about and researching space, which is now maybe 8-9 years ago, when I would talk to space companies, there was almost no interest in somebody who had an MBA but did not also have, say, an aerospace engineering degree. And today that really has shifted. And I think that part of the reason is that because this is becoming a more normalized industry, because we are seeing companies like Planet and other Earth observation companies trying to sell to companies that never have given space a second thought, the skills of management and sales and strategy and marketing and operations and all these other things become more valuable. And the space knowledge, the technical knowledge can be complemented by folks who are just excellent business people, leaders, and managers. And so my students are having success getting positions at places. Of course, it still helps to have some street credibility on the technical side, but you can get there even if you don't.
Yes, Buck Rogers needs a CFO. Matt Weinzierl. He is a professor at Harvard Business School teaching the economics of space. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is Hotel Mars Episode N. I'm John Bachelor.